You're listening to Level Up with Melissa Zalouf from Iron Source.
So, hello everyone, and welcome back to Level Up. I'm Melissa Zalouf, and you're listening to, I just said it, Level Up, the podcast for people who love making, growing, and of course, playing mobile games. Today on the show, we have guests Javier Barnes, free-to-play game economy specialist and writer at Deconstructor of Fun, and Ethan Levy, gamer in residence at Connect Ventures. Thank you guys both so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having us. And Javi, good to see you again. So, someday we'll see each other not on a podcast.
So, yeah.
I feel good about the fact that you guys are enjoying the video element of this. I'm still getting used to it. Every time I do a podcast, I'm like, Jasmine, do I really need to do video? But apparently it's good for engagement. So hello, everyone. This is what I look like. So in today's episode, we're going to be talking about blockchain gaming, which we've done a few different episodes on, and kind of what does it need to go mainstream? But before we dive in, I'd love for both of you to kind of tell us a little bit about yourselves, how you got into the industry, what's been your experience or perhaps your position on blockchain gaming so far. Ethan, maybe we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, hello, everyone. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I have been designing and producing games for about 20 years at this point. I've worked on over 80 ship titles. Ranging from every business model, every platform, working primarily as my pillar of strength is game design. Like Javi, I have a specialty in monetization and game economy. I've also done production. So, you know, my highlights are executive producer on Tetris. That game is done. You know, we did multiple SKUs of that. And I think the public figure on that is well over 15 million downloads on those. I was the lead designer on Legendary Game of Heroes that just had its sixth anniversary of live operations. And the public figure of that, that's 3 years out of date at this point, is over 250 million in revenue. So those are my highlights. Monetization consulting on a lot of the best top grossing console and mobile games at the time I was doing that. And just love writing about games, talking about games, and talking to people like Javi. It's a lot of fun to be able to kind of go back and forth with a peer and someone who has similar experience in monetization and speaking on games. So thank you for that.
And where do you come out on the blockchain?
Oh yeah, I'm probably of the people who are come from the world of Web 2 free to play mobile gaming. I'm one of the most vocal evangelists for blockchain gaming. I have been for the past year and change since having kind of a conversion to thinking blockchain was the stupidest thing to thinking blockchain was a really great thing in the next. Transformative business model that'll make lives better for players. So I've spent the past year just making a lot of media explaining why I think it's better for players and developers. And I've, incepted Legendary Heroes Unchained at Network and then left to start my own blockchain game company. I couldn't get any deeper into blockchain games than I am right now.
Okay, nice. Javier?
Yeah, I've been in the game industry for a decade now. My background is on game economy design and systems design. I've been holding different positions on those two topics. I was a game economy director at Game Love Montreal. I've also worked as lead game designer for a game called Monster Legends from Social Point. And on top of that, I've been in companies such as Game Loft and Tilting Point. My experience with blockchain, funny enough, it's not on games. I was an economist for a blockchain SaaS company called Euler Tools, where I designed the tokenomics, financials, and managed the marketing department about 2 years ago. And I'm not currently involved with anything related to blockchain, but I'm closely watching from the from outside of the field, and it's a topic that I'm quite interested in. And the beginning of my career was on with the advent of free to play, and it's funny to detect some similarities. No, of not sure if it's a change of paradigm, but definitely it's something new coming up.
Thank you both for that quick summary on yourselves. I'm going to kick this off, and maybe we'll start with Javier, because I'm not sure you exactly answered the question on whether you're sort of bullish or bearish on blockchain. But maybe let's start with a little bit of context. What are the benefits, if any, of blockchain for game developers? And why should the industry be even interested in kind of making blockchain mainstream? / should the industry be interested in making it blockchain? So Javi, let's start with you.
Well, I think that the biggest benefit for developers is that it's a blue ocean in growth in mobile. Of launching a new game in mobile, it's extremely challenging. It's a space where almost every meaningful niche is quite galvanized, and recent changes in attribution and how user acquisition works for mobile has made it very difficult to launch and scale games. But contrary to that, blockchain, it seems like it's a market that it's not yet saturated, and there's a bunch of new titles with very different rule sets. And I think that's the biggest benefit, no? At the moment, it's blue ocean. It also involves new tools and new ways to raise funds compared to traditional gaming. And ultimately, several of the Web3 benefits like interoperability, ownership, and so on, it seems it's easier to provide them through blockchain than through other solutions. So I would say that for developers, these are the three key benefits that I identify. But I'm interested in knowing what Ethan thinks.
Go on, Ethan. Why are you bullish on blockchain?
Yeah, I mean, I think about a year ago, I wrote a piece called 5 Reasons Why I'm Bullish on Blockchain, and I should probably revisit that because I know a lot more about the technology than I did then. But in as succinctly as I can, most of the people who I interact with, who you know read or listen to our content on Deconstructor of Fun or other places, come from free-to-play mobile games, are mostly either venture-funded or part of a public company. The interesting thing about the free-to-play business model and the needs of investors and the needs of growth and hitting targets is they often can put you at odds with your players and delighting your players, and specifically short-term needs around fundraising or around quarterly earnings reports or earnings targets. You know, there are all sorts of things when you work in this part of the industry where the needs of your investors and the needs of your players can be out of alignment. And when that happens, you can make choices that are good for the company and the balance sheet short term that are really bad for the players long term. And if you had a longer term view of your game economy's health and your revenue and the importance of retaining players, a lot of times I think you wouldn't end up making those sorts of decisions. So to me, the biggest benefit about blockchain, why I'm so excited about it, is that it aligns the incentives of the developer, operator, and the players, because the players own the objects, right? Because they own them and a portion of your revenue, you know, I don't know how much, we don't know yet how much your revenue stack is going to come from secondary market royalties, but it could be 100%. But because your need as the operator and the player's need as the owner of those assets are aligned and wanting to keep those things valuable and relevant, it's my hypothesis that it will force us as economy designers to make better decisions that are in our players' best in long-term interests and not in our best short-term interests. And that will result in healthier game economies, more fun games to play. The other thing that I think is worth pointing out is that a lot of what Javi and I and other game designers do is kind of try and create an emotional experience or an emotional payoff for players. You know, that's a lot of what game design is. You could call it emotional manipulation, right? You have an intended outcome and you develop game systems and experiences that try and create that outcome. It's no different than making a theme park ride, right? You're trying to create emotions inside a person. And I would say that for a lot of the world for whom gaming isn't their primary hobby, the way it is for me, you know, things like adding money add stakes to events that enhance the emotional experience, right? So like if, you know, people who don't care at all about when I don't care about football at all, right? I don't watch football. It's not part of my culture.
You mean American football?
No, I love American football. I mean football, the world sport. I don't care about that. Right. Okay. But when I go to my Brazilian friend's house and it's a World Cup game and it's a room filled with Brazilians who love football and we all put some money in an envelope and bet on the game, suddenly the stakes are raised for me in a way that I'm much more engaged with the experience, as is everyone in the room. Right. I just look at it as almost sugar in a cup of coffee. Right. It's a sweetener. It makes it much more vivid. And, you know, all the people around, there are people around the world who would never consider themselves gamers who love poker or blackjack or mahjong, right? So I actually think that adding the collectability to it and the ownership and the potentially financial stakes can actually also broaden the audience once the technology gets more easy to use.
So I have a weird follow-up question here. Because part of what you've said to a certain degree is kind of like, in theory, blockchain expands the market of potential gamers, mm-hmm. right? Because people who consider them gamers, themselves gamers, would be interested in kind of a high stakes, whatever, higher stakes situation that they can participate in. There'd be more payoff for them literally and also kind of emotionally. Yeah. I want to counter that with, and this is my question because I honestly, you guys are the expert. Isn't it so far working the opposite? Meaning either it's kind of like people who are doing blockchain games or playing blockchain games are either in it only kind of for the money or because they're very into gaming and this is kind of blue ocean gaming and so they're trying it out, versus your sort of mass audience gamer who doesn't consider themselves a gamer playing a hyper casual game, let's say. Do you think we're going to see players like that on board or sort of like download and enjoy blockchain based games, like your typical hypercasual, I'm playing in the queue for like the bus?
So these are the things I'd say, right? Like when Farmville Blue, I look at this very similar to how I look at the free to play business model transition, right? I look at the span of time between Farmville exploding on Facebook Canvas and now where Call of Duty makes more of its revenue from free-to-play experiences and in-app purchases than console experiences, and Grand Theft Auto 5 is on its third console generation due to the success, popularity, and revenue generation of Grand Theft Auto Online. When Farmville blew up on Facebook, we would never have been able to predict, or people would have. And when I said things like this, you know, I wasn't even this bullish on free to play, but like people called me an idiot, like made fun of me, said I was, you know, said all sorts of horrible things, fellow game developers and gamers, when I was positive on the free to play business model, when Farmville blew up. And when Farmville blew up, you could not have predicted that Candy Crush would exist, be so popular, be hitting its 10-year live ops anniversary on phones. You could never predict that Call of Duty would be making more of its revenue from free-to-play than from disc sales. You could never predict that Unreal Maker Epic Games would never need to make another Unreal game again, right? Because they made a free-to-play game that didn't succeed, and then they made another free-to-play game spinning off that game that blew up so big it changed not only the direction of that entire company, but of a large portion of the game industry. So you can't predict what blockchain games are going to be like 15 years from now, but I wouldn't use what we're seeing today in terms of players and experiences and quality of games. I wouldn't look at that to extrapolate what blockchain gaming is going to look like 15 years from now. And that's okay. The type of long view I'm taking on this business model transition.
So now it's transition, maybe talking a little bit about obstacles. And Javier, maybe will give Ethan a chance to drink some coffee. there's the recent and sort of ongoing turbulence around crypto, it seems, and users that sort of feel a little bit wary of the currency. What are some of the challenges for blockchain going mainstream? You can take the short or the long view. We know Ethan's taking the long view. That you kind of see.
I'm personally not a long-term person. I like to have a shorter-term vision. So to me, when it comes to the obstacles, I think that there are different obstacles depending on what do we understand as mainstream, no? And actually, during this conversation, there has been different definitions of mainstream actually toyed around, no? Like Ethan's description of some of the benefits seemed a kind of mainstream that maybe targets more hardcore players or players that are already targeted by gambling or potentially targeted by social casino and stuff like that. And then there was also mention of mainstream as Hypercastle, right? Which is kind of the challenges to bring the current audience of Hypercastle or audience that are not really familiarized with games are completely different. No? On the short term, at least, even when it comes to adoption of hardcore audiences, I think that the biggest challenge is the lack of stability. The fact that there have been cases where the worth of your assets suddenly goes up, down, goes down apparently forever for several projects and so on, that is a counter, or it generates an effect against adoption, even for specialized audiences, which are the ones that are going to be probably the first wave of mainstream, no? The lack of stability, for me, it's a big issue. And the second is something that is somehow related to something that Ethan mentioned, which is that potential customers are not necessarily in the platforms where these products inhabit, no? In the case of free-to-play, either on Facebook or social networks or on mobile, the audience was already in the social networks, and then gaming came in. The audience, when it comes to mobile free-to-play, the audience was already had a smartphone, and then free-to-play gaming came in. But here, it's the biggest bulk that has to be the audience of these blockchain games. They are not in the blockchain platforms yet. There is a process of growth of adoption, but at the moment, I would say that it's in a completely different level of scale of what we could identify as the beginning of social network and mobile free-to-play.
Ethan, anything to add? / what would you say to sort of a skeptic?
Yeah, I mean, to me, there are a lot of challenges about being a developer in the blockchain gaming space, and that's part of what makes it exciting and part of what makes it a blue ocean and part of what makes it scary. Some of those challenges are regulatory. It is unclear what will be a legal permissible token in the United States and many countries around the world. And can I launch a token? Or if I launch a token now and it's successful, will the FCC determine it's a security 2 years from now and then find me out of existence? That's a risk every single investor and game developer needs to be aware of per country they operate in right now when they're looking at tokens and fungible token assets and non-fungible token assets. So unclear regulatory is a challenge. unclear platform rules, also a challenge, right? Javi and I wrote a deconstruction together about Thetan Arena and how they operate with NFTs on the App Store and on the Play Store, and that it seems like kind of a loophole gray market area where it's unclear. If I want to access the biggest gaming audience in the world, which is mobile gamers by install, you know, by people with devices that play games on a daily basis, mobile gamers is the largest section of game players around the world. I don't know what is permissible on Apple or on Google. And so what that means is that you have developers taking risks, doing what they think is right, and sometimes they get approved, and then sometimes they submit a bug fix update and their approval is taken away. Like, it's a challenging environment to be a developer on, because it's still Wild Westy and the rules are unclear. And if you say, I'm just going to sit on my money and wait until the rules are clear, you know, you might be sitting on your money for a decade. Who knows how long the laws will take. So that, along with the friction for players to get onto the technology, I mean, there are risks all around. Every risk to me as an entrepreneur is also an opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Everything that I look at and I say, that's hard, that's also a problem that could be solved, that could become a $100 million a year, $1 billion a year revenue generating company if you solve it right, you know. Super exciting.
There's a book, no? Every obstacle is an opportunity, turning obstacles into opportunities. I have it.
Somewhere I'm sure it's filled with heartwarming advice.
Right? It's very inspiring. Okay, so kind of we've talked a little bit about why we think it's exciting and what are the obstacles and challenges. Let's circle back to the sort of main question, which is, what do we, like, obviously we're not going to solve the challenges you've just outlined here in this episode, but kind of what does the industry need to do to sort of create at least enough, the right environment to enable blockchain gaming to go mainstream? And Javier, maybe we'll start with you. And who, when we say what do we mean by the industry, right? Like, who are the big players that kind of need to get their act together or focus or invest resources in order to make this happen?
For me, I would say there are three points that need to improve, which is adoption, so the amount of people that interact with these products, stability, and protection for customers. Probably the three elements need different actors, no? When it comes to protection for customers, I see very difficult that that can be achieved without a clear regulatory policy, both from policymakers and from stores and all sorts of providers. When it comes to stability, I think that it depends a lot on the developers reaching expertise on how to maintain their products as something stable. We have seen examples like Axie, that they were able to reach a peak of performance and then they went down. And so far, I would say, not sure if maybe Ethan disagree, but I think that nobody has found the formula on how to make one of these products stay performant for a very long time.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree with that. I founded a company because I hope to be that person, you know? Like, I want to put my hat in the ring and hopefully, along with some cool colleagues, figure it out. Absolutely agree.
If I can have to judge that from the beginning of free-to-play, what happened at the beginning of free-to-play, and I was working at a company that pivoted to free-to-play, to mobile free-to-play, like at the very beginning, we didn't know what we were doing. So we were testing, like, there were different formulas. We tried, like, there were examples out there, the Smurfs Village game, which had like super aggressive monetization, but the audience was super casual. Like, there were all sorts of attempts until there was some sort of consensus of how to do a free-to-play game or several archetypes of how to do free-to-play game. And nowadays, it's very difficult, almost impossible to find anybody that, when it comes to business model, is doing anything new. It's more like formulas. The business model has been solved in free-to-play, and it's more about adapting it to specific audiences and so on. And we're not in that stage when it comes to blockchain games, not by far. And then, when it comes to adoption, I think that protection would be something really useful, but also on blockchain providers, they need to double down on making it accessible for regular audiences or audiences that are not crypto fans already, no? Because the complexity in terms of data, lingo, the sort of language and management of information that you need to master before you even can become a customer, it's really challenging right now.
Ethan, anything to add? And since you've already talked about timeline, do you think that there's a sort of timeline? Are you willing to hazard?
I'm not. So I'll say, like, if you think about the length of time between Farmville and Genshin Impact, right? Like, that's the sort of timeline I think we're looking at for like hardcore gamers to go from hating blockchain and sending me death threats to begrudgingly loving an experience in this new business model because they finally see it's better for them. There are so many things that need to be discovered, improved. I think Dapper Labs and Recur are two companies I look at that have really high ease of use, low friction, easy payments, easy checkouts. You don't, normal person accessibility where you don't need to know all the blockchain stuff. Cause like, you know, my mom's never going to do anything that requires writing down a 12 word seed phrase and storing it in a place that she'll remember and no one else can access. Like there's a lot of things that need to be done to make the technology easier to use, less scary, less jargony, more stable. There are things that the different infrastructure pieces need to do to clamp down on scams, to make assets more secure. We have to discover sustainable game economies. There are critical pieces of infrastructure that don't exist that need to be built around monetization, analytics, distribution, everything. You know, it's like building a whole new game industry from the ground up, and it's going to require thousands of people, different developers and governments and, you know, venture capital firms and public companies and private companies all trying a bunch of stuff until we figure it out.
I mean, I can see the passion in your eyes. Last question for both of you. Are there any up-and-coming blockchain games we should watch out for? Feel free to shamelessly self-plug.
Completely shameless self-plug. I was the executive producer of Legendary Heroes Unchained at Network. I'm no longer working on that day-to-day, but I'm still an advisor, and there's a very talented team of my peers working very hard on that. I think that's one to watch. You can join their Discord right now and play a kind of throwback MUD in Discord that looks like a multi-user dungeon text adventure. They're uploading new maps every day where you can compete for whitelist spots. They've launched their white paper, and that's, I know some of the more exciting stuff that's coming, but that one is one to watch for sure. There's a lot of projects that I like that are interesting. I'll call out Void Runners, for being kind what's the other one? Void Runners is kind of like indie, fun, experimental, smaller, and doing some cool stuff and has a playable game in the browser. Those are going to be my big plugs right now. What Gabe Layden, you know, former boss of MZ, is doing with Digi Daigaku is really interesting right now. There's a lot of strong rhetoric from him, but I will say, as a holder, it was pretty cool to get something for free, and then a couple weeks later know that I could have sold it for a really can still sell it for a significant amount of money. I'm diamond handsing right now, but that's an interesting, you know, it's like being, so far it's like being on a minor Bay Area, a Bored Ape Yacht Club style rocket ship for a couple days, weeks. We'll see where it goes. You know, it's there's so many interesting things happening in the space.
I feel like you've just given me the headline for this podcast. Javier.
Crazed developer with murder energy in his eyes. Totally devoted to blockchain gaming. Others
I'm
sit.
And... Minor, barrier, space ape, whatever you just said, Yacht Club. I'm running out for words now. But yes, I like that one too. Javier. Games to watch, if any.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely monitoring what Ethan does and what his new game looks like. I would say that personally, the games that I've been following the closest is Gods Unchained and Splinterlands, and particularly Gods Unchained, because I'm an actual player, and I think the gameplay is really good. They're probably... you know, there has been a lot of blockchain games that have been criticized by not being gameplay focused enough, but rather like the blockchain features kind of overshadow everything else. And I think that in particular, Gods Unchained, it's an example of a game that it's a good game, even if you don't take in account the blockchain elements. DG Daikaku, I think that's worth monitoring. I still don't understand the system, like I don't understand the business model, because for me it's like I don't understand what difference there is if you provide something for free, but then that generates a speculation as if it used to. But I'm definitely interested on learning some other concepts that.
Yeah, here we go.
I think. Well, no, the free to own thing on Digi Daigaku, I don't think they invented it the way the public claim. Like I said, there's a lot of hypercharged rhetoric out of there. But one way to look at it is they released a thing, you know, they gave away a toy with an unknown future use for an unknown future game. And based on the power of hype, personality, and PR, they've already generated over $1 million worth of royalty revenue on that project. So that's cool. I wish I had $1 million of revenue from my unreleased game right now. That would be very helpful. Yeah.
No, I think, again, I think it's a project that is worth money, or at least I'm watching closely that one, because I don't understand it. Like, I don't understand what they want to do. For me, the short-term money, it's not that really important, not because I wouldn't want to, you know, have that money, but rather because we have seen in this space things pop out massively and then poof, went to nothing. So
yeah,
I try not to be that focused on the news of the day and more like okay, is this sustainable? What kind of model is this try to? And sometimes I think that there has been examples of games that had interesting models and have failed. I still think that Theta and Arena, it's a very interesting use. It's a very interesting case to monitor what happened there, because I think that some of the ideas that they had were pretty solid. They just they missed on the execution of some of the concepts.
And you can go deeper on that thought by going to the Deconstructor Fun blog and reading the article Javi and I wrote on Theta and Arena. True.
Second shame
and
I'm good at this part.
Lastly, I would say that one project in particular, or one game in particular, that I'm monitoring close, and because I think it's a good source of inspiration for several blockchain projects, it's Roblox. Because I think that Roblox have been successful at providing a lot of the benefits of Web3 through a system that does not use blockchain technology and has risked some of the problems that involve it with blockchain technology, like regulatory gray zone, blockchain instability as a whole, because like if you know BNB or Ethereum suddenly fluctuates, how is that not going to affect your game if it's in the same, if your currencies and your assets use those major tokens to transform into real money? I think that Roblox, they have been able to build an ecosystem that resembles what a lot of Web3 projects would like to be. So it's one thing that I'm interested in, no? Because for me, if I have to think on, okay, if we think on short term, not like 10 years, but like how can this look in 2 years or 3 years, what I think is that maybe the whole decentralization involved in the blockchain is perhaps something that is not necessary. No? I still have doubts, at least, on that regard.
I sense a follow-up episode. I'd want to discuss both of those. Anyway, that brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you guys both. This was super interesting. I did expect a little bit more, you know, contra between the two of you, but it's okay. It was still fun. And thank you, everyone, as always, for listening.